Hello and welcome back to another episode of In the Barn. I'm Robin.
And I'm Kelsey. And in today's episode, we're going to discuss grain, how to read a feed label, what's the difference between senior feed and growth grain. We are also going to compare feed companies and rank them from best to worst. Is Triple Crown worth the price tag, or is the store brand a steal of a deal? Stick around to find out. Discussing nutrition today, specifically grains, how to understand a feed label, what your horse even needs to eat. And I just want you to know that I have spent probably 17 hours at least researching this topic in the last like day and a half. And I got to the point where I was literally having nightmares last night about trying to find like the best feed for this draft horse. Like we had draft horses at my barn and I had to find the best feed for the draft horse. And I was like on some scavenger hunt, scouring every single feed label. So like this, I feel very overwhelmed and hopefully I've learned something in the last few hours, like the last day and a half. But also I feel like I have learned nothing at the same time.
I know. I feel like I've read way more on feed labels and feed and like crude protein percentages and everything else percentages than I ever have ever before in my life. And I feel like I know nothing.
Yeah, nutrition is something that's super complicated. So I will give the disclaimer while we're going to be talking about nutrition, we are not nutritionists. We are not experts in the subject. Nutrition is for horses is very nuanced and very complicated because a lot of it is going to depend on your specific horse, your specific, you know, amount that you exercise that horse, their current weight, what your goals are for that horse. A lot of the information we're going to give is for your average horse in a light to medium amount of work. And that's about 1,000 pounds because that's where it's easy to do the math. Not everything we say may apply directly to your horse because your horse is an individual, if that makes sense.
Well, so that actually is a huge part of the whole grain thing and talking about the different grain is because it is so nuanced to every single horse. And it's not just that it's each horse, where they are, like what age they are, but then how much work is that one specific horse in, what weight, like what body score do you want them at?
Yeah.
But then also you have to take into account like what hay are you feeding? What is your hay quality? What grass are they out on? What is your soil? So much that goes into it that makes, you know, the really generic feeds kind of difficult to say that like, oh, this is good for every horse, because really there's so much different variations that you just can't apply a blanket statement to them all.
Yeah, exactly. It's really complicated, and a lot of it has to do with all these other factors in your horse's life to decide what grain is most important. And then, you know, what are your goals when you're feeding this horse? Are you maintaining the weight? Are you increasing muscle? Are you increasing weight? Like, what are you doing that it is? It is really complicated. And so that's why I think there are so many opinions when it comes to feed. And I think it's, you know, because it is so nuanced, it is so hard for the average horse person to just even figure out where to begin and how to understand what your horse needs. So with that, should we sort of just begin? I'm not sure the best place to begin other than in my notes it says how to read a feed label, so I figure we could just start there.
Yeah, I think figuring out how to read the feed label itself is important, as well as like figuring out, like, it's great that you can read how much of something is in there, but how much should be in there too. That's another really important part of it all.
Which also how much should be in there, but also how much your horse should get is one of life's little mysteries. Like, I'm going to explain this, but I want you, like, so the research Robin and I did, neither of us paid for anything, or at least I don't think you paid for anything.
I didn't, no.
The goal that when I was thinking about this is that, like, this is the research that we want everyone has access to. This is the information that everyone has access to. And if you start by trying to figure out, like, you start Googling, and not even in Google Scholar, because that's not even any more helpful, like, how much protein should my horse get, or how much of this, or how much of that, you will not find one source that has it all that information together. All of the sources are very piecemealed, and that's why it took me so many hours to sort of put all this information together. They'll talk about how much is in a feed, should be in a feed bag, but they won't talk about how much your horse should get. And that's because to find out that information, you get to buy it for the low, low price of $80 if you want the online version. But that information of like the daily recommended nutrients for a horse, and it's all summarized in a book that costs a lot of money. With that, let's start. So the majority of the states in the U.S. have adopted what is called AFCO standards. So that is the Association of American Feed Control Officials. I think we talked about them in one of our previous episodes on supplements. Maybe like...
I think it was our original supplement episode. We talked about them.
I think we talked about them. And so what AFCO is, it is a voluntary membership association of local, state, and federal agencies. Their members are charged by their local, state, or federal laws to regulate the sale and distribution of animal feeds and animal drug remedies. What has happened is most states have adopted this non-for-profit underneath the Department of Agriculture, and they set industry standards for things like what has to be in a guaranteed analysis. So your guaranteed analysis is like the nutrient label on most of your feed. Most of our food, not your feed. We don't eat feed. We eat food. But like if you turn over right a bag of chips, it has the like, this is the number of calories. This is the number of like grams of protein, grams of XYZ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that is what the guaranteed analysis is for horse feed. We don't do calories for horses because determining calories for horses is actually a really complicated process and includes like burning their poop. So like we're not going to, so we don't actually use it.
That escalated really fast.
No, like it's the thing, it's the process. Like you have to, that's how you determine how many calories is in a product, is like you burn it. And it's, I don't, it's been a while since I've been in chemistry, but I know there's fire. That's, I remember there being fire. But anyways, calories is not something we really worry about with horses. We worry more about like the percentage of different foods and different nutrients that they're getting. What the AFCO standards have done is they have taken the National Research Council's recommendations. So the National Research Council has done a bunch of research. They started in 1949, trying to determine how much of what, when, where, how, why horses should get each nutrient. So those nutrients are crude protein, crude fat, crude fiber. For fiber, that also includes acid detergent fiber, neutral detergent fiber, calcium, phosphorus, copper, selenium, zinc, vitamin A. They also, the National Research Council has a bunch of different vitamins and other ingredients that they also look into and make daily recommendations for how much that horse should get. And all of that's going to depend on the age of the horse, the amount of work, if it's a broodmare, a stallion. There's a lot of different sort of tables and math that goes into that. So the National Research Council, NRC, they published what's called the Recommended Nutrients Allowances, and that started, like I said, in 1949. The last published one was published in 2007, and that's the sixth edition. It started as a 29-page document in 1949 and is now a 341-page document.
Ooh.
So if you want to know how to feed your horse and what percentage of what they need, depending on their age, their work, their everything, you need to buy this book. So because this book for the online version is $80, like this is what grain manufacturers and are using to determine how much of what should be in their products, same with supplements. But for the layperson to get access to this is really hard. And the last published version was 1989. You can find the tables from 1989 available. Basically, what I had to do to figure out how much your horse should get of these is I had to combine a bunch of different resources, because there's research on what's the difference between 89 and 2007, and then there's the 1989 version is published, but I can't, no one can get access to 2007 without paying for it. So that's why when you do research online, blogs and magazine articles really don't summarize the percentage of what your horse should be getting, because they can't. They can't just publish that information. It's not theirs to publish.
Well, and it doesn't make sense. Why make this information be locked behind a freaking paywall? Why is it so detrimental to someone else that I know how much protein or crude fiber my horse should be getting?
It's also really interesting because the NRC was created with like an act of Congress. So like it's technically like it's not an agency necessarily, but they do operate underneath like Congress, a ways down there. AFCO is a non-for-profit, but they have been adopted by each state individually as a branch of the Department of Agriculture. They're separate organizations that operate with the assistance of Congress. That is why it's really hard to find that information. So the information that is required by AFCO, and this is like nationally, some states may have a little bit different requirements, but most states have all agreed, and if you look at your feed bag, you'll see all of these things, is crude protein, crude fat, crude fiber, acid detergent fiber and neutral detergent fiber, calcium, phosphorus, copper, selenium, zinc, and vitamin A will all be on your feed label or are all required to be on your feed label. You also, if you look at your feed label, will probably see a dozen other things that are not required but are important to us. Like vitamin E is not required, but it is sort of, we're starting to understand that vitamin E may be something we need to be supplementing for. So I just want to give a quick shout out to a couple of the resources I did use real quick, which is, the first is A Nutrient Needs of the Performance Horse. This was published by Lori Lawrence. She's a PhD. She did publish this in 2008, just after the 2007 recommendations had been released. And so she basically compares what's the difference between 89 and 2007 in that. And then the second document I relied on really heavily was a publication from North Carolina University that summarized the fifth edition or the 1989 recommendations. And so they had their tables. And then with Lori's information, I could figure out what had changed from this 89 version to the 2007 version. One of the reasons that nutrition is really complicated is because you have to first determine how much your horse should be eating a day. Like, how many pounds of food does your horse need a day? And that can range for the average horse in medium work from like 17% of their body weight to 25% of their body weight. Once you've determined how much your horse should be eating a day, and a lot of that's going to depend on just like, what body score do you want your horse to have? How is he maintaining his weight? Does it feel like he needs more? So for today, for this episode, we are going to kind of picture that your horse is about 1,000 pounds and that they eat 20% of their body weight, which is 20 pounds. Let's start with the top of the feed label. The very first thing on all feed labels is crude protein. And this is the guaranteed analysis, not the ingredients list. The ingredients list absolutely may not and probably often doesn't start with protein. Interestingly enough, protein is like one of the most controversial nutrients for horses. This has been something that has been really debated over the last few decades, and research has like wavered greatly on how much protein your horse needs. On average, a horse that is in maintenance to moderate work needs about 8% of their diet as protein. It may be a little higher depending on your specific horse, but 8% for the adult average horse. Now, if your horse is young and growing, it's going to be a lot more than that. It's going to be like closer to 12 to 14%. The controversy around how much protein to give a horse was started in the 70s and the 80s and continued into the 80s because there was a belief that horses in work needed a lot more protein than a horse in not work. So they were recommending about 10 to 11% protein for a horse in work. And this was under the assumption that it needed to keep up with the amount that they were exercising. And in truth, like, the research found that horses actually were able to maintain, and like, they didn't need more protein just because they were exercising. They actually sweated out that extra protein or were able to get rid of extra protein, and that they were stayed stable around 8%.
Do you think part of that comes from like people's obsession with human diets? And like, you know, if you start working out more, people are always telling you like, you got to eat more protein. Do you think we just like took what we consider our dietary needs and pushed that onto horses?
Because protein is all about muscle development. And I think the assumption is if the horse is using their muscles more, they need more protein to rebuild those muscles, not realizing that it's actually not protein that the horse needs, it's amino acids. And that's the same with people. It's a makeup of certain amino acids that you need, not protein, right? Amino acids make protein, but you need these amino acids to make the correct proteins and fill the correct holes in your diet, or in like, when you exercise, you lose certain ones, you maintain certain ones. If you remember in last week's episode, we discussed that we don't really know what to do with amino acids in horses. Like, we just haven't really finished that research, which is really interesting because while protein is what most people choose a grain on, they'll choose a grain based on the amount of protein. It's not the amount of protein they should be looking for. It's the amount of lysine, which is a specific amino acid they should be looking for. So lysine isn't required to be on feed labels yet, though it is recognized that lysine is important. So of that 8%, 4.3% of that should be lysine. And it's assumed that if your horse gets enough lysine, they're also getting enough of the other amino acids. However, I do question the lysine one, because it was determined that by the national, the NRC, the National Research Council, that lysine is the first amino acid to become critically limited in developing horses. So horses that are under five and growing. And I feel like then they just panicked and were like, everyone is lysine deficient. Put lysine in everything. And it's like, wait, is that true? Or are we just like so afraid because we found out this one thing this one time and we're like, just add the lysine. It's kind of the same with vitamin E, I think, as well. We're just like, just add it everywhere and let's not worry about it.
Right. There's, because there is a lot of research into, you know, what to feed foals and like 2 to 3 year olds and stuff. But no one really does much for, you know, older horses or like matured horses.
Yeah. So when I looked for lysine research, it was all in yearlings. Well, that's great. But my horse is 20. Like, I don't know if that is he get critically limited in the same amino acids that a yearling is? Probably not. But the big change from 89 to 2007 was just recognizing that quality of protein really mattered and improving the ingredients we were using to get protein from.
I am definitely one of those people guilty of picking a grain strictly off of the protein amount in it.
I was that person. And after this research, I realized that I have a different ingredient that is most important to me now. And it's not protein.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be changing how I go back to the feed store in the next couple of weeks. Because, yeah, I've definitely picked it based off of just like the protein and the fat percentage, because that's what they put in big bold letters on the front of the feed bag or numbers.
Actually, the fat percentage is the fat is the one I'm more interested in. But I am the entire time I did this, I'm thinking of my senior horse who's a hard keeper. Every grain I was looking at and every piece of information, I was like, so I've got a thoroughbred that's a hard keeper. Okay, so fat is going to be super important. I want to make sure that my grain is high in fat. Protein isn't actually as important for him at this age.
Right, right.
If you're looking at your feed label, most bags are going to be anywhere from like 8 to 16% protein. 16% is really high, 8's average, low. So if you have a bag, so for example, that is 14.5% protein, what you do is you multiply the amount of pounds you're feeding times that percentage to determine how much of that the horse is getting from their grain alone. My horse eats 10 pounds of a senior feed a day. I know that's a lot. Makes the math a little bit easier for me, so that's really nice. But 10 pounds times 14.5% is 1.4 pounds of protein from his grain alone. He's also getting hay. He also is on grass, so he gets protein from other sources as well. So that is 1.4 pounds is a little bit under the 1.6 pounds he should be getting if he's getting 8% of his diet as protein. Getting it from other sources is good. So a 14% protein, that's, you know, that's probably plenty for him. If you are curious about what are good sources of proteins, the company, the software, the website, FeedXL, does have a really good list of what are good proteins, how much crude protein is in that ingredient, and how much lysine is in that ingredient. So it's a really good breakdown of good quality proteins. I think it ranks them from best to worst, and then how much lysine is in it, and gives some information about them. So the best protein is, can you guess what the best protein is if you don't already know? If you go to the gym, you know what it is.
Whey protein.
It is. Whey protein is the best protein, and then followed by soybean meal. So those are like the top two. After protein and lysine on that ingredients list, or on the guaranteed analysis, is crude fat. Now, if you see a couple other things before crude fat on your guaranteed analysis, those are other amino acids. So it will do protein, all their amino acids, and then crude fat. Crude fat is a new addition to AFCO standards, as NRC just recognized it in 2007 as actually being important to the horse's diet. For whatever reason, low fat was also a trend with horses, which is like ridiculous. Crude fat is a little bit different, where there isn't a recommended percentage that your horse should get a day. An average diet for a horse that eats just hay and grass, and even most concentrates, are going to have about 1 to 4% fat, depending on the quality of hay and quality of pasture. And then an average grain is going to be maybe 4 to 6% fat. It has been determined through research that horses can utilize up to 20% of their diet as fat. So determining how much fat is going to be in your horse's diet is really going to depend on what your goals for that horse is. Fat is the number one ingredient in any weight gain supplement. It has a lot of energy and a lot of calories in it for a rather small package. So things like high performance feeds as well as senior feeds are going to have high crude fat percentages.
At least they should.
At least they should. Absolutely. At least they should. Especially if you have a high fiber, which is the next thing, is crude fiber. You're going to want to look at your fiber to fat ratio, because I think those are really important, because the more fiber, the less energy. Fiber is hard to digest. So hard, in fact, that we now have acidic detergent fiber and neutral detergent fiber listed on the grain bags. And those are, and in hay, and the acidic detergent fiber and neutral detergent fiber are basically sort of the calculation of how much cellulose and lignin and plant material is in that feed. While cellulose is digestible, lignin is not. Those numbers, you want them as low as possible. They're never going to be zero, obviously, if there's fiber in there. And there is plant material in fiber, as it's plants. So on average, an NFD content of 40 to 50% is good for hay that we're going to apply to grain, because there's not a ton of research into what that content should be for grain, but that's also going to vary greatly on how much fiber and plant material is in your grain. So in grain, I'd probably want to see a little bit lower, because I'm feeding grain, not hay. And same with ADF, their content is 30 to 35%, which is good for hay. It's ideal for hay. But again, I'm feeding a grain, not hay, so I'm going to want to see that lower. So at a minimum, your horse should be getting 1% of their body weight in fiber a day. Fiber is in pretty much everything. It's in roughage, it's in grain, and there's going to be different amounts of it in your grain and your versus your hay. So most grains are relatively low in fiber. Hays and forages are the highest, like I said. Grain fiber is usually about 2% in energy dense grains such as corn, to up to 12 to 14% for things like oats. If you have oats in a grain, if you have a grain product that is over 10% in fiber, that's because it has a lot of roughage, and hay is often alfalfa is going to be the base of that grain. So the next thing on your labels, vitamins. There's going to be a long list of what vitamins. There's also going to be a long list of minerals. There haven't been many changes in how much of A, D, K, and B your horse should get since 89. So those are pretty low amounts. It's like 0.3% of their diet needs to be a mix of A, D, K, and B. The other vitamin that is going to be on most grain bags these days, it's not required yet, is vitamin E. So it has been determined that horses that eat mostly hay diets, don't eat fresh grass, are vitamin E deficiency. A lot of the research has been around proving that horses are vitamin E deficient, and not necessarily how much vitamin E a horse needs per day. But according to the National Research Council, they bring in about 1 to 2 parts per million per kilogram of your horse's weight, which that equals for a 1,000-pound horse to be about 1,000 to 2,000 parts per million of vitamin E. And so you'll notice on your bag, it's not going to be a percentage that's vitamin E, it's going to be a parts per million. A horse essentially needs about 1 to 2 grams of vitamin E a day. About 1,000-pound horse is 1 to 2 grams of vitamin E per day. Most grains are going to be about 200 or less parts per million of vitamin E that I was able to find. 200 was pretty high. I did find some over that. Then multiply that out, you have to be feeding like 10 pounds of that grain a day to ensure that the horse is getting close to enough. The other thing with vitamin E is there's really only one version that we recognize as being useful, and that's a plant version. I have the name later because I have to pronounce it. Alpha tocopherol. Oh, I'll say it later. But it has to be a natural vitamin E. A vitamin E that's like lab created is not absorbable by the horse. So you're basically wasting your money. So the last little thing I'll talk about when you are looking at your feed label is your calcium and your phosphorus. So most of us grew up hearing calcium to phosphorus. That's a 2-to-1 ratio, but it can also be a 1-to-1 ratio where calcium is the 2, phosphorus is the 1, but they can be equal. So you're going to want to, depending on the ingredients that are in that grain, that may increase the phosphorus in order to get more calories in that grain. And so I did find one grain that like had limestone as one of the main ingredients because they're trying to balance.
What?
Yeah, because they needed to, it's a calcium supplement, and they needed to offset all the wheat middlings because wheat middlings are really high in phosphorus. So I wouldn't worry so much about the ingredients as just making sure that that feed and guaranteed feed analysis does not go over that 1-for-1 ratio. And most of the time, this is a ratio people are pretty aware of and companies have been aware of for a long time, that there's usually always going to be some form of extra calcium in order to make sure you never go over that ratio. That's how to read a feed label. Or how to read a feed label, how to feed a horse. I don't know what that was. I don't know if that made sense. I don't know if that was what I set out to even do. But that's what I did.
I feel more knowledge has entered my brain. I feel like I understand a little bit better on how to break down a feed label, understand what I'm looking at, and potentially what the numbers should or shouldn't look like.
I hope so. And well, of course, when we start breaking down and comparing these grains, I think it's going to make a lot more sense, because we're going to like look at those ingredients and those guaranteed analysis and be like, good, bad, or this checks out, this doesn't check out. It'll make a lot more sense when you actually start looking at the labels.
Right, right. So before we start digging into our various companies that we each looked into, I wanted to take a quick look and just kind of break down the differences between what senior feed is going for versus like young horse growth feed versus whatever else is out there, because it feels like there's a lot, and when these are necessary, and if you're looking for those types of grain, kind of the like what you should be looking out for in each type of these. The first category of grain that I kind of took a look at is low sugar grains. This has really come up in like the last probably 5 to 10 years, where it seems like every company has kind of pushed out their own version of this. And it can kind of be unclear to people when they should be feeding a low sugar, low starch grain, because ironically, low starch diets aren't for every horse, you know? Just like any grain out there, it's not for every horse. The purpose of low sugar grains or low starch grains is for horses with PSSM, a history of tying up, laminitis, Cushing's, although my autocorrect changed Cushing's to bushings.
My horse has bushings too. It's a huge problem.
If your horse has Cushing's, equine metabolic syndrome, or if they are insulin resistant. Low starch diets are not always suitable for every horse though, like I was just saying. Some horses have a hard time maintaining a healthy weight when their starch is reduced, or they'll be really low in energy when they don't get that starch and the sugars that they need. Typically, young horses and various equine athletes, you know, depending on your horse, will require a diet with a bit more starch than what the low starch diet, which would make sense because low starch diet is designed to be low in starch. What you want to look for in low starch and low sugar grains is that, one, many manufacturers can just slap the label saying a grain is low starch without needing to really define or explain what they mean or how low starch is. But to be more specific than the manufacturers are, a low starch feed does not contain a high amount of cereal grains. And these cereal grains are things like oats, corn, grain byproducts, or wheat middlings, which a lot of grains you'll go and you'll read, and like the very first ingredient is wheat middlings and grain byproducts. And if you're looking for a low starch grain, those should not be anywhere near the top of your feed label. Those should be listed towards the bottom of the ingredients list, right before the vitamins. These feeds should be high in fat and fiber, with ingredients such as soy hulls, beet pulp, alfalfa meal, or rice bran, which is both high in fat and fiber. And low starch feeds kind of work on a teeter-totter system almost, where the lower the starch means the higher the fiber and the fat should be. Another number to pay attention to when you are looking at low starch feeds is the NCS, which is the non-structural carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. Some manufacturers, but actually when they say some manufacturers, I mean most manufacturers, won't list this number on their feed. And to find out what it is, you'll actually have to call them to ask. One company that I was looking at that did list this number right up front on their website for like the various low starch grains you're looking at was Buckeyes. But I was looking at a number of other websites and they didn't list it. You would have to call the manufacturers and ask them what this number is in this feed that you are considering buying.
Yeah, I found that. I can't remember. I looked at so many grains now. Maybe it was Purina for their low starch, low sugar grain, or one of them that are making that claim. Didn't post sugars in their guaranteed analysis. So it's like, well, don't say you're low sugar and then don't tell me the ingredients and then don't tell me that there's the sugar. Like, this doesn't make sense.
They're like, it's low sugar, but you don't need to know how much sugar is in there.
Exactly. It was like, okay, well, that's stupid.
So when you're looking at a low starch feed and you're looking at that NCS number, that non-structural carbohydrates, you're looking for it to be on the lower end. So a feed high in NCS is something that is 35% or greater. A middle ground feed has the NCS at around 35 to 20%. And a low NCS feed, which is what you want for a low starch, low sugar feed, is 20% and under. So that is what you want to be looking out for on those kinds of grains if you have a horse that needs that type of diet.
I thought they were supposed to be even lower, like 10%.
I think the lower, the better. 20% and under is what I was finding counted as low.
And I looked into it for hay specifically, so I know like hay is supposed to be 10% or less.
It's really frustrating when everything you're looking at is all the companies themselves saying what the grain should have in it. And you're like, well, yeah, you're going to say that because that's what your grain has in it. So it's really hard to find this information away from them and like separate resources that are not the feed companies trying to provide it to you.
Again, because the feed companies are the only one that bought the NRC book. Like, they're the only ones that have that information. Boggles my brain. It's like, why is it, this shouldn't be such a secret how much I need to feed my horse.
Nah, it's a mystery. It's a mystery. And so I'll get into one of the companies I was looking at. They listed like a bunch of their research partners. And then I went to try to find the research because they didn't link any of it. A lot of the research they do isn't public, which is so frustrating because it's like, that's what I'm interested in. That's what I want to know. If you are using that to make your feed, why can't I find that and read it?
I know what you're talking about because I found that too.
If you're looking to feed your horse a performance grain, the purpose of a performance feed is to replenish the glycogen, which is the storage form of glucose and is important for energy levels, and it helps prevent fatigue. So the most important thing coming from a performance feed is energy. And what you want to look for in a performance grain is you want to look for high fat percentages. And a high fat feed is typically somewhere between 6 to 12%. Fat has 2.25 times more energy than traditional grain. So added fat can replace starch in the feed and help maintain energy levels. Fat has also been used in feeds because it is characterized as a cool energy source, while glucose, which is from starch and sugar, is considered a hot energy source. Ideal fat ingredients, if you're looking at a feed, would be flaxseed, rice bran, or vegetable oil. Feeds formulated with high fiber, which would be greater than 10% crude fiber, may be lower energy feeds. Typically, a feed with 7% or less fiber is considered an energy-dense grain. You'll also notice that performance feeds will typically be higher in calcium and phosphate, and this is going to be due to bone remodeling that occurs when the horse is in heavier work, and calcium and phosphorus are needed in large amounts. And like Kelsey was mentioning earlier, you want to make sure your calcium to phosphate ratio is 2-1, especially with a horse that needs that extra calcium to help their bones remodel properly and be nice and strong. You don't want the ratio to be 1-1 because then you could have deficiencies in your horse's skeletal structural integrity.
It's also really nice that you have, like, your research has, it confirms all of my research. Because I was worried that I was like, what if I'm doing it wrong? What if I missed something? But so far, you've, like, everything I found, you're repeating. So that's amazing.
The only one I think that I might have gotten a little bit wrong, because as you were talking, I was reading through it, is the young horse stuff, because there is so much different information out there about young horses, and it is such like a, everyone goes to bat on what you should feed young horses, and it's like, well, what's the right number here? What am I looking at?
I guess we, I mean, everyone agrees protein.
Yeah, protein. You just want the young growing horses to get all their nutrients, so you want to be feeding them something that's dense in nutrients, dense in protein. And I saw on multiple websites, don't starve your young horses. Doesn't help them grow well. So in case you needed that reminder.
Well, I want, I think when it comes to young horses, though, you have a lot of people that just like pasture raise them. And like grass is a great source of everything. Your grass may not be the best quality grass. So that is something that I think a lot of people may forget is that, oh, my horse is on grass. Grass is, you know, almost complete. But if you don't have a good grass, then it might not be as complete as you think it is.
Well, when I was looking into it and looking at like what an ideal young horse / growth feed is, a lot of it was like a horse that's like a year or under, you know, after they've been weaned, their diet should be like 50% roughage and then 50% a concentrated feed. Obviously, that 50% isn't the 10 pounds that you're feeding an adult 1,200-pound horse. Because I don't know if you noticed, but foals are a lot smaller than full-grown horses.
They tend to be. I was surprised that when I was trying to figure out what to feed Hudson when he was a youngster, as a horse that is a fairly easy keeper, I wanted to just feed him a ration balancer because I was like, that makes sense to me that a young horse, I feed them a ration balancer and then just make sure he gets alfalfa or quality protein other places. But most ration balancers aren't made for young horses. Like you shouldn't be feeding them to young horses.
Also, I was finding a huge thing about young horses, right? Their digestive tract isn't set up to handle as much forage and like free hay as a mature adult horse is. And so a lot of times they get like a really big grass belly.
Yes. Hudson will testify to that.
He definitely met the grass belly quota.
He did. He has actually lost like 50 pounds in the last few weeks. So like, let's all give him props. He's, you know, new year, new Hudson.
Go Hudson. I'm proud of him. He's really going to fit into that swimsuit he wanted.
Yeah, he's getting ready for swimsuit season.
So the purpose of young horse feed is to ensure that growing horses are getting all necessary nutrients to grow and mature at a steady growth rate. So what you want to look for in a young horse feed is that young horses should have a higher protein diet because the amino acids act as the building blocks for tissue and bones in developing horses. You're going to want to be giving them plenty of protein so their body can build itself properly. In general, growing horses 1 to 2 years old need about 10 to 15% more protein than mature horses do. So you want to look for young horse feeds that is about 14 to 16% crude protein, particularly the lysine at 0.8 to 1%. A young horse diet should not consist of low energy or bulky feeds because their digestive tracts are not large enough to handle that. The level of nutrition, protein, vitamins, and minerals relative to calorie requirement should be much higher for a growing horse than it is for a mature horse. So you're just making it like it's a really concentrated feed that they should be getting. Fat is considered to be safer than carbohydrates to feed young horses because blood glucose levels don't tend to rise following the ingestion of fat calories as much as they do after carbohydrate calorie consumption. And the caveat of this being that you'll typically want to keep with a feed that is under 12% fat with young horses. So while fat is important, you want to keep that. You're going to want to keep that under a certain number. Young horse feed, kind of like the performance horse feed, should have a ratio of 2 to 1 for calcium and phosphorus. Once again, as they're growing, you want them to develop nice, big, strong bones. And ideal ingredients at the top of that young horse grain should be things like oats, alfalfa meal, beet pulp, rice bran, soybeans, and peanut hulls. And then finally, the last kind of category there is out there for grains. I mean, there's a lot of different categories depending on what you're looking at. But the last like generalized category is senior feed. The purpose of senior feeds was that it's designed to overcome dental issues in older horses, although dental issues are not limited to just older horses. Older horses deal with a lot more dental issues typically than younger horses. It is formulated specifically to be nutritionally complete and easily digestible, as well as break down easily to form a mash when mixed with water. A lot of times older horses have a big problem with choking, and so adding water to that reduces the dust in the feed if it ends up being a dusty feed and helps it not get choked on. What you should look for in a quality senior feed is, first and foremost, senior feeds should come in a processed form, either as pellets or extruded to help with them breaking down the nutrients and digesting it, right? When a horse gets older, their intestines, their system, they have a harder time breaking down that nutrients and using it like they used to when they were younger. Moderate calories are going to be coming mainly from fat and fiber sources in your senior feed. If your horse has dental issues, a higher fiber senior feed can be given, especially when hay cannot. So that's something you're going to see is fiber is going to be a lot higher in senior feeds because, especially complete senior feeds, because it's a design that if your horse can't eat hay, they can have an excessive amount of grain and it will do the job essentially. Your fiber should fall at around 12% and come from easily digestible sources such as beet pulp, soybean hulls, dehydrated alfalfa, which has lucerin in it, and almond hulls. It should have at least 4 to 6% fat to maintain body condition. And a good source of fat, once again, is going to be rice bran, flaxseed, and soybeans. And it should contain a high quality protein to maintain muscle development. And your senior feed protein should range from about 12 to 14%. Once again, that protein is important that it's coming from a high quality source in senior feeds. And high quality protein ingredients are going to be things like soybean meal, alfalfa, canola meal, and distiller's dried grain. And all of these are digestible sources for amino acids. And that is your different categories of grain. Now we get to talk about the grain itself.
Ooh, okay, I'm excited for this part, but I do again want to give a little disclaimer. Want to give that like legal disclaimer so no one sues us. My lawyer has advised us of doing this. Actually, we don't have a lawyer, but the following rankings and scoring, because we did score these grains on four different categories, is based off of our opinion and our research. You may have different experiences with this feed, and you may have different goals with giving these feeds that you may rank them differently. You also may have different priorities, right? Like cost, the amount you're spending on a grain may be different than the amount I'm spending on a grain and that. Like, so do keep in mind that we're gonna rank these, but that your experience may vary.
I think that's a really good thing is to point out is what is your goal? And that's why we were talking, you know, about how to read the feed label. And I was breaking down what your goal is if you're seeking out a senior feed versus a performance feed. And that is why it's so hard to just apply blanket statements, because it is so specific to your horse. Not only your horse, but like your horse's breed. How old are they? And like the more you niche down to it, you realize how much your horse is individualized in this.
And that's why the 2007 NRC was 340 pages long, right? As there's yes. a lot that goes into it. It is all very specific. With that, we have decided to rank these grains on four different categories. So the categories we're ranking them are cost, ingredients, label hype, do they live up to the label, and any issues that this grain or company has had. Should we say what companies we're looking in at, or just surprise them as we go?
And just say what your first company is.
Okay, my first company is Purina, the checkerboard, the hashtag. Let's try this again from the top. One, two, three.
It is not a hashtag, dear. It's
a hashtag. So the first company we're going to talk about is Purina. They're famous for that red and white checkerboard. They used to, I think, sponsor a lot of stuff, but their name has been replaced perhaps with other names at this point. And there's a couple reasons for that. So their little tagline is feed greatness. So Purina was founded in 1894. That is a heck of a long time ago. This is like one of the oldest feed companies. I don't know if there's a feed company older than that, but 1894, that is a heck of a
run. None of mine are older than that. That's old.
That's old. And they did start as like an actual feed company, and they became famous for feeding chow. Like that was the name of their product. So they had Purina horse chow, Purina dog chow, cat chow, rabbit chow. They even had Purina monkey chow.
Yeah, if you're an average suburban family.
Here's some monkey chow. Feed greatness. So they did that. I thought that was hilarious. In 1902, they expanded to breakfast cereal for people, and I'm really bummed they didn't call it human chow. Like, missed opportunity there, folks. Super missed. In 1986, the company was bought by British Petroleum. BP owned them for a little while, which I'm not sure I understand how companies work. But the big merger, the most recent merger, was in 2001 when Nestle bought their pet care line. So Nestle, their Friskers cat, whatever, they bought the pet care company side, the dog and cat food. And then Land O'Lakes Co-op bought the livestock section. So in 2001, Purina was split in half. So Purina does still exist, but they are now under Land O'Lakes and under their feed corporation. Yeah. So they have a lot of different lines. They have Impact, Omaline, Smart Edge, Ultimate, Race Ready, like a ton of different lines of feed. And then depending on what you're trying to feed, different types within each of those lines. One of the most common ones, or one of the ones that was like the first grade I remember feeding, was Strategy. We started feeding that in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we realized our pony absolutely did not need wet cob or sweet feed. That the pony that did not get turned out enough, who was becoming very angry and cranky, did not need sweet feed. With that, the first grain I looked at was Strategy. So Strategy, the cost per bag is about $23 to $25. It might be a little bit less if you're buying it in store versus online, but locally, Tractor Supply for my region had it between $23 and $25. If you read the bag, they recommend about 5 to 7 pounds of food a day, depending on the horse's workload. And so that's about 3 bags a month. So it's a little over around $75 a month for Strategy. So I don't think that's like a bad price at all. So I did give them a 5 for their cost. I thought that it's a pretty affordable, and once you go through and look at the breakdown, it seems decent price for what they say is in there. Unfortunately, I had to give them a big fat zero on ingredients because they are not available online. And they posted that they're not available online because each state has its own requirements for ingredients, which is true, but also not true because, as we mentioned at the top of the episode, the ingredients, all of that is regulated by AFCO, which is adopted in like every single state. So I don't understand why they can't tell me what their ingredients are online.
So I ran up against that too. And it also doesn't make sense to me because if you're selling a feed, wouldn't you make it one state has stricter regulations? Wouldn't you make it your ingredients list matches up to the strictest state? So then you could make it publicly known across all states online. Wouldn't that make sense?
I totally agree. Or you could make two different formulas because one of the companies we didn't look at is LMF. They are a region-specific grain. So they are Texas West, but then they have a different formula for like the for Washington, Oregon, and California is on one formula. Texas is on another. Like they have a couple other regions in there. So they each have their own formula depending on what nutrients would be limited. And maybe it has to do a little bit with ingredients that are allowed, not allowed per state. But then they also take it a step further and they have a grass line and alfalfa line. So their formula, so they have different formulas for every region and then different formulas depending on if you feed a mostly grass hay diet or mostly alfalfa based diet. And I can find all that information online. So if LMF can figure it out, so can Purina. The other thing that's a big red flag for that is that, and you'll find this out in a minute with a different company, is that they have tons of manufacturing plants all over. Each state probably has at least one Purina manufacturing plant. Your grain could be easily very region specific. You can easily change that list depending on that region because you have grain being manufactured in that region. So then it should also be available to like post that information.
Right, right.
Okay, so moving on to the label. So for strategy, their guaranteed analysis for crude protein is 14%, which is a high protein. Their lysine is 0.9. which is high. Crude fat is 6%, which is low. I mean, that's a little bit above a hay, but it's fairly low for crude fat. Fiber, 12.5, which is getting up there. ADF is 15%, which is pretty low and that's pretty good. And NDF is 34%, which is good. But because I don't have their ingredients list, it's hard to kind of confirm that. But I am impressed that their ADF is like, this is the lowest I found in any grain, which means it's one of the most digestible grains out there. And like the fiber and the protein, a lot of those, it seems to be good. It's a low fat grain. And that's sort of the point of strategy is that it's a complete feed for a more easy keeper horse. So I do think they kind of live up to a lot of their claims. One of their claims though is like controlled starch and sugars. Well, I don't have the ingredients list and they don't put sugars on their guaranteed analysis. So how can I confirm that you are low in starch and sugars? They do talk about protein that performs, high quality protein sources and amino acids. Again, I don't know that's true because I don't have those ingredients. So it is a little bit frustrating that they make these claims, but then don't back it up. One of the issues I did find with this grain that is mentioned in reviews is that they use byproducts in their ingredients. So they use forage byproducts, molasses byproducts, grain byproducts. And so if a company is using things like grain byproducts, and that's what it's labeled, a grain byproduct can be like 40 different things all mushed into a pile. And that's a grain byproduct. Like it could be oats, it can be corn, it can be brewers, like it could be a bunch of different things. And you wouldn't know what is in that ingredient list if it's just grain byproducts. But because I don't have their ingredients and this is just a review, does she mean that there are grain byproducts like wheat middlings? Because that's a grain byproduct. Or oats, even portions of oats is a grain byproduct. I don't know if that's what this person means or if that's what the issue is because I don't have an ingredients list. But there can be grain byproducts that are specifically listed that are good and tend to be highly digestible and good sources of energy. So without an ingredients list, I really can't figure out what that is.
Well, okay, so I actually came across this as one of mine, and I did some reading about it, and grain byproducts, which isn't necessarily bad for your horse, but by them saying just grain byproduct is them being really vague and essentially allows feed companies to substitute different feed stuffs based on availability, like market availability.
Sure.
Such as when oats are in season, it'll probably be something to do with oats as that grain byproduct. Or when soy, like nothing else is available, they'll use soy as that grain byproduct. So it's not inherently bad, But by being less specific,
right,
it gives them room to substitute whatever that grain byproduct they have available into the feed. And they make it so it's a small enough amount that your horse shouldn't call it.
Sure.
It's not going to be shocking to their system, but it allows them to change it.
This also is a mark of a large company. So smaller companies, you're typically not going to see byproducts. And that's because these are byproducts of their higher end grains. So a lot of times they're going to be using a more consistent formula and whole products and better products for those higher type, their higher lines. And then what's left over, the residual stuff that didn't get utilized, poor quality, will get cycled down to those lower ends feeds. That makes sense. It's the same thing with dog food. So they don't post any research, but they also don't have a ton of big claims. So I ended up giving this a 13 out of 20, mostly because I don't have the ingredients list to truly walk through if this is a good grain or not. The second one is their senior feed. So I looked at Purina Equine Senior Feed. It's a red bag, not the blue bag. It's the red bag. It's about $28 a bag for what in my state, in my region, if I wanted to go to the store and buy it. And $28 is a little bit more for a grain, obviously. Like that's, I would think, a higher end feed. I can buy other grains of better quality for the same amount at my feed store. So that does surprise me a little bit that they're charging $28. They recommend feeding 7 pounds of this product a day. And so that ends up being about 5 to 6 bags a month for one horse and $140 to $170 a month for your horse. So affordability wise, I gave it a 3 because it's more expensive and I just don't think it lives up to the hype due to no ingredients and some really sketchy labeling. So I give them a 0 for ingredients, and then I don't know. This is like one of the weirdest ones I saw. No one else does stuff like this, at least for the companies I looked at, is they have what's called ActiveAge, which is their prebiotic technology. And ActiveAge is their patented formula, and it is supposed to reduce inflammation and increase immunity. They have a bunch of PDFs linked on their website to research, but that research is like their PDFs that they formatted. And the research I cannot find anywhere, which I think you mentioned running into. One of the studies was that this grain makes the horse, it improves their immunity after receiving an influenza vaccine. Like, that's a bold claim to make, that my grain's gonna improve my horse's, like, the vaccines my horse is getting, the quality of the vaccine. Which is strange to me because they said that they did this study in partnership with Gluck, which is in Kentucky, which is a research center in Kentucky. And Gluck is actually a well-known research center. Gluck has actually been responsible for inventing like 5 or 6 of the vaccines we give our horse. And they are doing research into how to improve immunity in seniors. So this is something they would have been researching, but I cannot find the study anywhere. I can't find any studies that say ActiveAge, yet they claim they have all these links to ActiveAge studies. And it's just like, it's a red flag we've run into repeatedly, is that the companies just a study occurs and they cherry pick information and are like, look, it backs up our product.
Yeah.
So for the label, they have 14% crude protein. Crude fat is 5.5% and crude fiber is 18%. That is too low. Crude fiber should not be 5.5% in a senior feed unless your senior does not need to gain weight, unless your senior does not need calories. 18%, like, does that make sense to you that the crude fiber would be 5.5%?
Or crude fat? Crude fat?
Yeah, 5.5%. That's a little bit better than hay, and crude fiber is 18%.
Yeah, that's not much fat at all.
Especially for a senior horse. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. As far as fiber goes, they have an ADF of 23% and an NDF of 39%. It is typical to see these numbers in this range for senior feeds because of the increased fiber in senior feeds. For meeting the label, I don't even know that I gave it points. Maybe I gave it a 3 for meeting the label. And then I gave it issues a 3 as well. The issues are the weird research, no ingredients posted on the website, and a patented formula that I don't understand how it's able to do what they say it does. And so that gives them a 9 out of 20. I would avoid their senior feed. Like, do not spend your money. It is not a good deal.
Yikes. Yikes on trikes. That is not what you want to see.
Well, it's not what you would expect from Purina. But again, we were looking at, like, I just picked their bottom senior feed. They do have higher, like, levels of senior feed, which may be better. But for $28, you can do way better for $28. I will prove it to you in a minute that you could do way better for $28. You don't need to pay $28 for a patent formula that may or may not increase your horse's immunity when receiving the influenza vaccine. Like, what? That just seems so bizarre to me. But anyways, I will hand it over to you.
Okay, so the company, the first feed company I looked into was Dumore, because I see them all the time at Tractor Supply. And I thought Dumore was its own brand.
Oh, it's not?
Nope.
No, what is
it? It's funny, the first brand you covered was Purina, because guess what? Looks like Dumore is a part of the Purina family.
Oh, interesting. I did not know that.
They're specifically made by Purina for Tractor Supply and exclusively only sold at Tractor Supply.
Which is, I am starting to understand more about brands. I've been watching Hope Scope on YouTube, and she talks a lot about, like, outlets and how brands, like, manage outlets totally differently, and they have these different lines that, like, I can see why Purina would do it and why they would partner with Tractor Supply exclusively to sell this line.
But what this means is, if you're looking for information about Dumore, you will only find it on Tractor Supply's website. If you try searching it through Purina like I did, it doesn't recognize it as part of their brand. But it is Purina. They have, like, if you look at the screenshot or, like, a picture of the bag itself, it says Purina on the bottom. But the only place you can find information about it is Tractor Supply.
Interesting.
Right, which is very frustrating, especially for me, because I didn't have a feed label handy, so I was relying on what they would have available online. And real shocker for you kids, they literally have nothing. 0 out of 10 for their transparency on their ingredients and what is in their feed.
That's annoying, because you can't even, like, go to their website to, like, figure out more about them. That's so annoying.
No, you can't. Their only website, the only place that talks about them, is Tractor Supply. And obviously, Tractor Supply, like, they have a lot of different lines of different things. They're not a horse feed company. I took a look at the Equistages Dumore feed, which Equistages is their complete feed. They also have a senior feed, a maintenance feed, a calm and steady, and an ultra shine feed, which I looked into them. None of them really had anything. They're all super similar to just the complete feed. So I don't know what they're doing. So your cost per bag is going to be $19.50 for a 50-pound bag. The recommended serving for a 1,000-pound horse in moderate work is somewhere between 5 to 8 pounds. So you would probably end up feeding around 3 bags a month per horse, maybe 4 bags, which would roughly be like $60 a month. So it's really affordable. If you can't afford much, it's really affordable. But since I did not have any Dumore feed labels on hand, trying to go through and read the guaranteed analysis online, which they didn't have for any of their other grains except for their senior feed.
Weird.
Right. That's so weird. So, like, all I could find for, like, the maintenance feed, the Equistages, their complete feed, was a general ingredients list. But their senior feed was the only one to have a guaranteed analysis.
Weird. I mean, it should be the same. Like, the whole point of the guaranteed analysis is that it does not change. Therefore, you can post it because your formula is set.
Well, if you have the guaranteed analysis for one grain, you clearly understand what it is. You understand, like, where to list it on your website. You understand, like, you've done it for one grain. Why don't you have it for the rest of your line?
Yeah, that is really interesting. And it is interesting that, like, Dumore is worse than Purina, like, their lower tier grains. I know they do offer the ingredients list for some of their higher tier grains. So it is interesting that, like, what are you trying to hide or don't want people to know with those lower tier grains?
Right. And I ended up finding someone listing... Because I didn't have the feed label, so I was Googling everywhere to see if someone had taken a picture of the Equistages complete feed label, and no one had, but I did find someone that was selling it, a year or so ago, was selling their bags of Dumore Equistages, and had, like, taken a picture and or copy and pasted it, and so that's what I used for what was on their label because I didn't have a feed label handy. It was really weird because the first ingredient listed on the website is grain byproducts, which we covered earlier isn't necessarily bad. It's just, but it allows the mills to be a little bit more, they can substitute different things for what's available. And it means that larger mills can afford to sell it cheaper and keep the price the same because they can always fill it with something.
But it also means your guaranteed analysis is going to vary quite a bit. That core, if it's corn versus oats versus bran, right? Like that could change a lot. So that would be why the guaranteed analysis isn't posted anywhere.
Which is super weird because when the lady took a picture or like copy and pasted the feed label, it had wheat middlings listed as the first ingredient. But on Tractor Supply, it says it's grain byproducts.
Maybe they've changed in the last year? Maybe supply chain issues due to the pandemic?
Maybe they changed over to grain byproducts. It's very possible, but it was super odd because going through it farther, I was looking at it and their maintenance grain is the only one that has wheat middlings listed as their first ingredient. None of the others have a different first ingredient listed online than the maintenance feed, which makes me think that that one has to be manufactured in a different mill.
Yeah, that's weird.
But they're not consistent. Like I am so lost because they're not consistent. And this is super weird. Like why is one of your grains have a completely different, like a maintenance feed? Why does that have wheat middlings in it? But your senior feed, your complete feed, your, like, I looked into their specialty ones, like the Ultra Shine, the Calm and Steady, those are all grain byproducts.
But like grain byproducts also shouldn't be your first ingredient. That is fine if it's gonna be in there, but it should be further down. You should, most grains have a fiber as their first ingredient or a protein. And wheat middlings is almost there, but not quite. Like a wheat middlings is,
I don't know, I've seen a lot of grains, I've seen the nicer grains, they have wheat middlings as their first, and wheat middlings is a byproduct, it's just a very specific one. And so listing the general grain byproduct means that it could be that, or it could be something completely different. You know, it's not bad necessarily, but it's also not great. It's something you see a lot of times in more affordable grains because they can interchange it with other things. That's how they keep the price down. So for their crude protein, Doomer had their complete feed at 14%. The lysine was 0.65%. But when I went to look at some of their other grains, their maintenance feed, which had like the wheat middlings as the first ingredient, then later on, they don't have lysine in there at all. And I looked through all their other ones and they have lysine listed. So it was super weird, like inconsistencies where they dropped around changing things that I couldn't quite figure out if it was a mistake or if they did just completely change these different grains, but then why? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I don't follow either.
Yeah, their crude fat was about 6%. Fiber is sitting at 18%, which is pretty high. The ADF and NDF, they didn't have anything listed for those numbers. However, when I went and looked at their senior feed guaranteed analysis, the ADF was 23% and the NDF was 45%.
Ooh, that's the highest I've seen. Especially for a grain, not for, that's okay for hay, which is like, you know, all fiber. Like, that's not okay for a grain.
Oh, and then looking at label accuracy, I honestly don't know how it lines up to their feed label in person because I didn't have hands on that one. But looking at their online, it was all over the place. And I'm just going off a Tractor Supply's website because that's the only place you can find information about it. But like from different, like from their senior feed to their maintenance feed to their complete feed, the amount of information known on each one was so different that it just doesn't make sense. So overall, with those weird inconsistencies in accessible information, kind of their lack of transparency, I gave them a 5 out of 10 overall for their rating. Because something about it just seems off to me.
Okay, wait, so that would be a 10 out of 20 if we're comparing?
So that'd be a 10 out of 20.
So that's the same with Purina, that what I was giving Purina.
Right, if you're looking for something affordable, I would just double check what the feed label on the actual bag says and don't go off of what the website says and just be aware of that if you're going to feed that.
So the next company that I looked into was Triple Crown. So Triple Crown is definitely known as a higher end grain. Triple Crown was founded in 1989 by a gentleman named Daughtry. I don't know his last, that is his last name. I don't know his first name. Daughtry.
Wait, Daughtry the singer?
Definitely.
You know the song? He's like, God. It ain't for Superman.
Nah, nah, nah. Yeah, exactly. So he bought an oat mill in Minnesota with the intent of manufacturing a oat-based grain product for racehorses. And one of the reasons he bought this company was because they had a trademark for the name Triple Crown. And he was like, boom, gonna make racehorse feed. And that's how Triple Crown became a feed company, because this oat mill had a trademark on the name Triple Crown. Fast forward to 2017, and you'll get a kick out of this. Many of Triple Crown's plants that were owned by Southern States Co-op were sold off to Cargill. Cargill is a subsidiary company of, drumroll, Purina! So if you are purchasing Triple Crown in Alabama, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Mississippi, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, Tennessee, Vermont, Virginia, or West Virginia, your grain is being manufactured by Purina.
Wait, so wait. Cargill is a part of Purina, or Cargill, like, owned part of Purina?
Cargill is a part of Purina. I believe they are subsidiary, like a subsidiary.
No, because Cargill owns Nutrina.
They also are part of Purina.
Oh my God, the overlapping. We thought we had so many different brands of grain here, and it all comes back to the same people.
Okay, so Triple Crown is still a privately owned feed company. What happened is, and this all comes from press releases by Triple Crown. So I went straight to the source. So Triple Crown still owns it. They are still in charge of the formulas, still in charge of the recipes. They decide who gets to buy, like, what stores they sell Triple Crown to. Because that's the other thing. Did you know grain companies decide if you get to sell their product or not? Like, just because you want to sell Triple Crown at your store does not mean you get to sell Triple Crown at their store. Like, it is very competitive, and they decide who, like, meets their standards for sales. That's why, like, a lot of times finding Triple Crown, it now is in Tractor Supply as of 2020. It's now available in Tractor Supply. But Triple Crown was, like, at very niche, little, typically, like, the feed store for the town, not necessarily, like, a chain. Anyways, in 2017, their group of plants was sold to Purina. Purina just manufactures it, but is not in charge of formulas or anything like that. Though they do say if you have complaints, you can call either Triple Crown or Purina. And they also say Purina salespeople are now educated on Triple Crown products, so can sell you both and, like, give you information about both. And I'm trying to figure out how that makes them a separate company. Why would Purina sales and customer service people be covering both products if, like, it makes sense that if you have a factory that it could manufacture multiple grains. Like, that makes sense to me. I'm not confused by that at all. But it is weird to me that why would the salespeople then be able to sell your product?
Yeah, it seems like they're integrating beyond just making the grain at their factory.
Yeah, and I don't know where that partnership, where that line truly is. They do, again, reiterate over and over that they have a fixed formulations and consistency and testing products, and all of those manufacturing quality checks are done by Triple Crown, not by Purina. Triple Crown, we looked at their complete feed, and their complete feed is just called complete feed. It's a blue bag. They do have, again, multiple lines. This is just the baseline, not the gold line. Though they all are called premium lines, and I actually don't totally disagree with that. They sell a bag for $30, and they recommend feeding 6 pounds a day. So that's 3 to 4 bags a month. Which would range you $90 to $120 a month. So for affordability, I'll give them a 4, because yes, they're a little bit more expensive than Purina and Dumore's lower products, but I think quality-wise, they make up for that. So as far as ingredients, they do post their ingredients online. You can figure out what is in their products. So the first ingredient is dehydrated alfalfa meal, then cane molasses, shredded beet pulp, whole oats, which is the first protein on this list, but it is a lower quality protein. Soybean hulls, which I know a lot of people hate soy, but soy is a really good source of protein. Just soy hulls are not a good source of protein, but they are a good source of fiber. Yes, they've got good fiber to start with, like alfalfa meal, shredded beet pulp, good fiber. Soybean hull is a good fiber. They've got wheat middlings, then dehulled soybean meal, which is a good protein. Soybean oil, which is good for omega-3s and omega-6s. ground flaxseed, they do have stabilized rice bran. So this is really important because some grains have rice bran in them, but it's not stabilized, or they don't say it's stabilized. And when you're feeding rice bran, you have to buy stabilized, because unstabilized rice bran has a very, very small, what's a shelf timeline. Like, it does not last very long. I think it takes like 2 weeks or so for unstabilized rice bran to lose a lot of its potency, and you're just losing all of those nutrients that would be in that rice bran. If it's stabilized, it's heat treated, it doesn't mold, it doesn't get gross, and it also maintains those nutrients. Looking at, they have a lot of ingredients, a lot of vitamins. The only thing that kind of annoyed me, or really annoyed me, was that they call it a vitamin A supplement and a vitamin E supplement, but don't tell me what that vitamin E supplement or vitamin A supplement actually is. And when it comes to vitamin E, like I said, only natural vitamin E that is from a plant, which is the alpha tocopherol, is the only version that is agreed upon that is absorbable for horses. So if you're feeding vitamin E supplements, it has to be alpha tocopherol. Otherwise, it's useless. Okay, though I did give them a little bit lower score for ingredients just because their quality of protein was a little bit lower. Again, if you look at their next line up, they use really good quality of protein. So I forgive them, but this product itself, their complete feed, their lower line complete feed, doesn't have the best source of protein. Reading the label, they have 12% crude protein, 12% crude fat, and 15% crude fiber, which is pretty good. Their lysine is 0.65%. The crude fat, that's high, right? That's twice as high as Strategy. The fiber is fairly high, but they have a 16% ADF and a 30% NDF.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then their vitamin E is 115 parts per million, which kind of checks out since they just say they have a vitamin E supplement. They don't even tell me what like quality of vitamin E they have. So I'd say they are meeting most of their claims that this is protein is not their highest. They did focus more on fat and fiber. And that is something that I found when you look at these grains, you're not going to get a grain that's high protein, high fat, and high fiber, like, and quality protein, quality fat, quality fiber, because there's no ingredients. Like, there's not an ingredient that does all of those things. You have to pick and choose what is important. Is it quality protein, or is it quality fat, quality fiber? You have to give one of those things typically. So overall, I give them like a 15 out of 20. I think they're a fairly good product. They don't really have a ton of issues. There weren't any bold claims. There was no research, but I think for a feed, a lot of this stuff doesn't necessarily need research because they're not making wild claims, Purina. And then the next one I looked at was their senior feed, which is about $28 to $32 a bag, depending where you are. They recommend feeding 6 pounds a day if your horse still can eat hay. And that's, again, 3 to 4 bags a month. And so that's $84 to $128 a month. That's fairly affordable, especially for a senior feed and especially for a quality senior feed. Like, don't even look at Purina's senior feed. This Triple Crown senior feed is way better. They have things like stabilized rice bran. For their ingredients and their label hype, I give them a 4. And one of the reasons being is that wheat middlings was pretty far up that list. And wheat middlings is high in starch. And they claim that this is a low sugar grain. You can't have a high starch, high sugar ingredient as number 2 and then also say that you're low in sugar. It doesn't quite make sense. Not that it's not impossible, but that's an issue. So they did get a 16 out of 20 in my book. I think that this is a decent grain, especially if you have a hard keeper. And do know it has stabilized rice bran in it. Their next lineup, which is the gold, gets a lot of hype because they say there's rice bran in that one. Well, there's rice bran in both of them. So I don't know why the hype is like more for the gold having rice bran when they both have stabilized rice bran. But if you have a horse that's a hard keeper and is a senior, I'd say this is a pretty good looking grain overall. And it's really not that unaffordable once you start to look at that ingredients list.
Right. Yeah, it's not too bad. The only thing I'd be curious about is, you know, how much that sugar content really is for a horse that has like Cushing's, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And they do have a low starch line. This isn't their low starch line. They just made the claim that like, oh, there's not a lot of starch in this. And it's like, well, your second ingredient is high in starch. So maybe that's true, maybe that's not.
All right. Well, then my next and last grain we'll probably cover today is Nutrina. Nutrina began in 1920, and in 1925, they had the pleasure of introducing the first colored bag into the feed industry.
What?
They were the first ones to put their feed in a colored bag.
Okay, that's what I thought you were saying, but I wasn't sure. But okay.
Nope, that's what I was saying. They're very proud of that. And you know what? Honestly, humble brag. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Wait, when did they do that?
1925.
Okay, there was like no other grain companies. It was Purina and them. Like the other companies I looked at weren't created till the 80s.
Leave them alone. They need to take their wins somewhere. You can't give them credit for putting their bag into color, putting a pop of color on that. Give that marketing manager a round of applause.
We didn't even know horses needed food in the 20s. We didn't even find out what they needed till like 49. We were just throwing like grain at the wall, hoping the horse ate it and didn't die. That I'm glad their bag was colored.
In 1945, Nutrina was bought by Cargill, which doubled the size of Cargill's feed business. And in 2001, Nutrina began the relationship with the American Quarter Horse Association. So if you're a part of that, you probably will see them pop up all the time. And that's why, because they have a partnership with one another. So you'll see them as a sponsor for a lot of those horse shows. The feed I looked at them at for them specifically was their Safe Choice. And I looked at their Safe Choice Original because they have, you know, they have the Safe Choice Senior Feed, Safe Choice Performance. They have the Safe Choice Maintenance. I looked at their original one, which is just kind of their general complete feed. The cost per bag for that one is going to be about $23 for 50 pounds. And so for a 1,000-pound horse that is in moderate work, the serving size is about 7 to 10 pounds of this grain a day. And that probably rounds out to be roughly 4 bags of feed a month, which would be somewhere around $90 a month. So affordability, not awful, not horrible. You know, $30 more than Dumore per month, but honestly, I would say worth it. Their first ingredient is wheat middlings, and wheat mids are obtained from the milling of wheat bran, wheat shorts, wheat germ, wheat flour, etc. Mids are a good source of energy, protein, and fiber for horses. And additionally, wheat mids help create a nice pellet that holds together well. Mids can enhance the pellet quality and make a cleaner pellet with minimal dust. Following the wheat mids, they have rice bran and soybean hulls, which are decent sources of fiber. They have crude protein sitting at 14%. Lysine is 0.9%, which that's pretty good. It's not too bad. Crude fat is 7%. Fiber they have at around 15%. Their ADF is 15%, which is not bad. That's pretty low, as well as their NDF is 34%. So pretty digestible.
Yeah.
You can find all of their feeds online. Along each one is going to be their guaranteed analysis, which is really nice because Dumore, I'm looking at you with this one, the transparency, being able to find the label online. I like it. They don't really talk about any specific studies in relation to their feed, but they do acknowledge different research partners. The only thing is when I went to, like, they acknowledge who their research partners are and what their research partners are researching or have researched, but they don't link any of that research. And then I couldn't find any of that research when I went to look into it, so I'm guessing they've kept that all to themselves. But they have worked with Leatherdale Equine Center at the University of Minnesota, where the Equine Center is designed to provide the most advanced diagnostic capabilities and research focused on the causes of performance problems in equine athletes. They also partnered with Michigan State. They study the area of different ingredient combinations on glycemic responses in horses. They also had research partners with Texas A&M University, their study area determining the optimal amino acid requirements in young and growing horses. Then another research partner was the University of Maryland. Area of study was the effects of starch levels and direct feed microbial on gut health. And then the last research partner was the University of Wisconsin River Falls, where their area of study was glycogen repletion in high-performing horses, which I think is cool. They listed all the research partners. I just wish that research was easily found. And then before moving on, I also took a look a little bit at their senior feed, which really wasn't a whole lot different than their original complete feed. And one of the things with senior feed is that a lot of times senior feed has to be fed in higher amounts because seniors can't always eat the same amount of hay they used to be able to eat when they were younger. So it's important to make it a very palatable grain for the horse and that they're willing to eat it. One of the issues that I found online about it is that a lot of people's horses don't like it. my horse included. I bought her, I was trying to feed it to her for like a month, and I didn't realize it was the senior feed she had an issue with. I thought it was the beet pulp for some reason that she was turning her nose up at, but she really doesn't like this, their senior feed. And apparently there's quite a few different horses. Like, I've seen recently on my Facebook, a bunch of different people are selling their like partially used bags because their horses just won't eat it.
Weird. Do you have any like reason why?
No, I don't. I have no idea why. I don't know. Perhaps it's because here at, like, you know, a lot of that accessible stores to go to buy grain is Tractor Supply. And Tractor Supply does not rotate through their grains that are out there. So their freshest bags are in the back. The bags out front are typically have been there for a couple of months.
Oh.
I don't know if that could be something to do with it. And like, our horses just don't like the grain that's sat around for a little bit longer. I was really surprised because your own horse doesn't like something that's, you know, that's them being themselves. But I thought it was really interesting that I've seen recently quite a few different people sharing that like their horses won't eat it.
Yeah, that is interesting. What if the grains I looked at, what if its like last ingredients was natural and artificial flavors? So I was just like, it makes me wonder, are there more grains that aren't extremely palatable? Because why would you have to add natural and artificial flavors to your grain? Like, it's grain. Shouldn't the horse be like super excited for it?
Right. You would think so. Because of the slight issue with their senior horses not being super into their senior feed, I gave them a 16 out of 20. You know, they're all right. They're decent.
That's pretty high.
They're all right. They're there. They're decent.
You tied them with Triple Crown.
I don't know if they should. I don't know. I mean, I like their ingredients. It wasn't.
Yeah.
I feed Nutrina. I have been. I'm thinking of switching up my grain, honestly, though, because of Tractor Supply. Because no matter what, when I go to Tractor Supply, the grain that I bought like the last time that I've been feeding for the last couple of weeks will no longer be in stock. So I always have to change what one I'm getting. And I hate doing that.
That's really annoying.
It's really frustrating because it's like you don't plan to transition them over to the new grain because you're almost out. So you just run to the feed store to grab your stuff. And then they're out of it. And you're like, well, I'm screwed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that was our grain. That was our stuff. I know both of us had more companies. We each had another company we wanted to talk about. But we're kind of running out of time, running up against the clock here. One thing I wanted to say before we leave is that Buckeyes that we see all the eventers sharing about, I was looking into them. And you know what? So far, I actually kind of really like them. But they were bought out by Mars Incorporated in 2005, which if we know anything about the Mars, Jacqueline Mars, they support everything in eventing. So I think it's super interesting that Mars Incorporated owns Buckeyes.
Speaking of companies that own everything, so I was just trying to do a side goog. Cargill owns everything. So Cargill owns Purina. There was like an additional breakdown between Land O'Lakes, like pulled out more in the last couple years, and now Cargill straight up owns them. Also, I did a quick goog on Cargill, and I saw the words charged with war crimes and war profiteering. So at some point, we should do an episode on Cargill, because when a feed company has war profiteering in their history, I'm intrigued.
I'm concerned.
And they own everything, and I've never heard of this company. So I don't exactly understand what all the relationship is other than Cargill owns everything.
Okay, so it came down to Cargill owns all these different grains, literally every single one that we talked about today. Nutrina, Dumor, Purina, Triple Crown to some extent, Cargill owns.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of it, where Mars Foundation, those guys own literally every single like event out there and support and sponsor everyone. They own their own feed company.
Okay, so I also looked into Tribute, and they are actually owned. Like, there is an overall manufacturer called Kalmbach, but they like just own Tribute. They don't have others, and I actually am intrigued by Tribute. They're one I'm gonna have to look more into. Can't get in my area, but I was actually pretty impressed with them. I have one more thing I want to share, because I found this really interesting, and it is a major pet peeve of mine. Your vet is not the best resource when it comes to nutrition. I'm so sorry to say this. A 2020 study, or a study that was published in 2020, looked at vets and their knowledge of the industry. So only 21% of veterinarians felt good about their knowledge level in nutrition after graduating a vet school. Majority of them had not pursued any continuing education. 75% had not pursued any continuing education in nutrition. And those who did were spending about 65 minutes a year on nutrition. But do you know who vets value the most when it comes to nutrition?
Ghostbusters?
Other vets.
Oh.
Only 21% feels confident with their information about nutrition, yet all vets value other vets' knowledge of nutrition over any other source, except for a PhD. Except for a PhD equine nutritionist, which that makes sense. I would definitely not doubt them. Someone with a PhD in nutrition, they probably know what they're talking about.
They've probably put more than 65 minutes per year into thinking about horses' nutrition.
I've put like 17 hours into understanding horse nutrition. I guess that makes me as qualified as a vet. I'm super not. But what I'm saying, it's a huge pet peeve of mine that people rely on their vets for nutritional information, and it's just not a field of expertise that vets have. They have a lot of other knowledge. They're really great on a lot of things. I wish people would rely more on nutritionists and even more on grain companies themselves. I understand that feed companies are trying to sell you a product. Most of them have feed reps that know their products very well and can give you information to point you in a direction of research and study. They are there for a reason. It's not just to sell you a product. It is to help inform you to make the best decision for your horse.
Which, that is very valid information. That way we don't have to always rely on Dr. Google, because Dr. Google doesn't know all.
No, he does not. But I do think like they understand their ingredients better than you and I will ever understand their ingredients. You do not have to buy their product just to talk to them about their product. So if you have questions about if a product is appropriate for your horse, they will tell you yes or no, it's not. They'll probably recommend a different feed in their line, but that will give you an idea of where you need to go for your horse. There also are a ton of computer programs and software programs like Feed Excel that would allow you to put in your information about what you're feeding your horse, and then we'll calculate where it is you're missing and make recommendations based on what areas you're missing. They won't recommend a feed product, but they'll say like, hey, your protein's way low. And they take those NRC recommendations and you can put all that information and get a ration balancer in a computer program.
Well, no, that's good. That's good to know the resources that we have available. That way, you know, you don't have to just rely on one thing. You have various tools out there to use at your discretion. Go out there, use them, figure out what's best for you and your pony, and you do you, hon. You do you.
But I guess it also makes sense why supplements are so prominent, because it's just probably a lot easier to be like, well, I'm just going to feed a supplement and just hope my horse is getting what he needs than trying to figure out and do the math. And
that's true. That's very true. All right. Well, on that note, thank you so much for listening along with us. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you learned a little something about your grain. If you have comments, questions, concerns, do not hesitate to reach out to us on Instagram at inthebarn.pod, or you can reach out to us on email or Gmail, as someone know, where it's inthebarnpod@gmail.com.
I just want to say thank you for everyone who's left reviews lately. Like, those are really nice. We super appreciate it. If you haven't left a review and you want to, feel free to drop one. We super appreciate it. We love getting those and reading those.
Yes, please leave reviews. We love it. We always read them. Kelsey, as soon as she sees one, she'll screenshot it and send it to me, freaking out that, oh my God, we got another review. And then I always respond in kind of, oh my God, we got another review.
It is really exciting. It's exciting to, and it's exciting to like know that there's hundreds of people that listen to our podcast. Like, that's also super exciting.
No, that's really daunting. That's scary. That's terrifying.
Okay, that's, yeah, so it's also terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. And that I tried to do math in this episode is also terrifying.
That is scary. Someone's going to know that you didn't do great in math now.
Yeah, they're going to know that I failed 3 times.
You failed 3 times?
We don't need to discuss this here, but yeah, trig is hard.
Trig? Wow. Sorry, I didn't mean to judge you. I understand people's strengths like in different areas. I'm so sorry. Okay. Well, on that note, stay safe, stay classy, and stay in the saddle.
And take your calculator into the feed store with you. I want to see you crunching those percentages. I want to see you
do math. Don't do math in public. What has Kelsey taught us today, kids? Don't do math in public.